everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, we're going to be talking about really interesting stuff, places of romance, things that count. Romance. Romance is so confusing, so confusing. Today we're going to talk about womanizers and manizers, if there is such a thing. Please pardon me, those of you who object to these terms, but they're terms that are being used everywhere, and I think I have an insight into both of these that will help people considerably. What is this person who is out there having all of these serial relationships? You know, whether you're married or unmarried, a man who has many women and goes from one woman to the next woman to the next woman, we call that a philanderer. There's an old term word for it. Philanderer, or some of you may know Bunburyist. Yes, you know, anybody who knows what a Bunburyist is, be sure to call me from the town of Bunbury. But it's, you know, it's somebody who's out there and he goes from one woman to another woman to another woman. It's from The Importance of Being Earnest, by the way. That's where it comes from. And Algernon Moncrief, that's where the word Bunbury comes from. Algernon Moncrief would come off his English high hat every now and then and go to the town of Bunbury where he would fool around with a lot of ladies. So that's where the expression Bunburyist came from. So going back to it, Bunburyist is one. Philanderer, you know, they would call a person a philanderer. But a philanderer was kind of interesting because philanderer specifically meant he doesn't care about anybody's feelings. He's using people, using women. There are straight philanderists and there are gay philanderists. Doesn't matter. Guy just wants to have a lot of different partners. So if a woman or a man could be a philanderist, because in nowadays, with women being much more aggressive and acceptably aggressive in their roles, women choose as many sexual partners as they want to have. And they can have one, two, three, four, five, a dozen. They can have a little blue book. I would say black book, but you know, that's not tasteful enough. They could have a little blue book where they call up and they could find as many men as they want to be with whenever they want to be with it. Why not? So what is it that drives this? What is it that, is it a restlessness? Why does somebody want to have sex with so many different people so often? I met a man the other day who was talking to me about his addictions, and along with his addictions, he talked to me about his sexual addiction. He said, I am always thinking about sex. He said, if there was an attractive woman in your office right now, who made herself available, I would have sex with her in the closet. He said, give me, you know, 5 minutes and I'll be right back to having my sessions. He said, it's always on my mind. Well, I've seen a lot in men. I haven't seen that very much in women, where they think about the closet affair. You know, well, then I have seen, maybe we have to use a different metaphor. But they have, people are crazed by the thought of having sex, and maybe that's what leads people to be philanderers, womanizers, manizers, or maybe I'm going to have to make up a new word for them all today. You know, just people with multi-partners. Now, one way that it's looked at is they looked at that someone who is in a, I'm sorry, they look at someone who has many partners, and for some people it's considered sexual addiction. And they saw it as sexual addiction, and they said, you know, there's a point at which somebody's got to have sex, and they got to have it so much that they are, that they go out to find or have sex in some form or other as often as they can. And this could be in any number of ways. Sexual addiction is now defined as viewing pornography masturbating. Now, I think they have to go together. I think just looking at, viewing at pornography doesn't necessarily have to be sexual addiction, although some people characterize it as that. But I think there has to be sexual pleasure with it. But compulsive masturbating, serial cheating, and serial cheating, you know, you like Wheaties one day and you like Rice Chex the next. No, that's cereal. That's different cereal. Serial cheating is where you go from, you have a primary relationship and then you have a secondary relationship and then there's another secondary and a secondary, you know. Serial, but it goes one after the other. Cyber and phone sex is very important here because a lot of people are having phone sex. It's the new safe sex. And either on the internet or by telephone, they find way, or people call people who you pay money to eroticize you on a phone. And that's considered, when it's out of control, when it interferes with your normal functioning, it is considered an addiction. Now, when I say interferes with your normal functioning, it means you don't have a relationship with your people in your family. It takes time away from them, and it takes normal time away from them. That means the time you would be spending in bed with your wife, you spend in front of your computer instead viewing pornography. That makes it an addiction. Or it takes away from your job. You actually stay at home because you would rather stay at home and do that. Or it takes away from your job because you would rather be dating women, and which is included in this. You know, I realize in my whole sexual addiction description, I left out sex with people. Yes, and if you have sex with people, and if you have sex with serial people, if you're a philanderer, that's also sexual addiction. This is Armand DeMille with you. With the positive mind, we know many men who will, in the middle of the night, wake up and go cruising, you know, and go looking for someone to have sex with. And they feel, if you talk to these men, you could find, you know, and they'll find partners. And you'll see that a lot of them are walking around looking, and it just doesn't matter who. Whether it's in a subway bathroom or down at the pier somewhere, you know, wherever it is, it's just the idea is to have sex and then go home and it's peaceful. I guess that's sexual addiction. But let's go outside of sexual addiction. What are the conditions would lead a person to have this kind of compulsive, gotta have sex, one right after the other? Well, a lot of people used to think erotomania, that was a word that was misused. And it meant they put two words together, eroticism and maniac. And they came up with erotomania, which they think means you're crazy sexual. But that's not really what erotomania is. Erotomania is a person or persons. It's a person who holds a delusional belief that another person, usually of a higher status or out of reach, is in love with them. And therefore, they have a fixation. They have a fascination to think about this person all the time. It becomes an obsession. And this happens a lot with movie stars and rock stars. Erotomania is somebody who thinks about this person and they really believe that that person of higher status, you know, it could be Bernard White at WBAI, or it could be the President of the United States, or it could be Madonna, or it could be anything. You take somebody out of reach. Somebody who's up there higher in the status, and you have these erotic feelings about them, and you believe through some kind of contact that you've had, you kind of interpret this contact and passing contact as meant for you. For example, if Madonna writes a song, and the song is called Armand, My Love, right? Then I would interpret that, oh, she meant me. But if she writes a thing called My Dear Puppy, and I remember when I used to be called my dear puppy, and I say, ah, she means me. So you interpret it as being meant for you. You interpret it as they really love you, but they can't come to you because they have other commitments. Erotomaniacs are dangerous, by the way. They're dangerous because the erotomanic person is likely to, if they believe there's another person in the way, whew, they're likely to kill that other person. because that other person gets in the way of your love. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. So then there's another thing you don't know about called persistent sexual arousal syndrome, PSAS. Yes, yes, persistent sexual arousal syndrome, the old PSAS. It happens to people. And what it means is you feel constantly turned on. You just can't get turned off. It happens to pregnant women, right? You know, a woman becomes pregnant and then suddenly for some reason, she's just sexually hot all the time. And, you know, there's almost like no end to it. So we know it's kind of hormonal, chemical-based. There's a drug. I forgot which one it's called. Do you remember the name of the drug? The trazodone. Yes, trazodone, which is a sleeping pill, I believe. I'm going to have to check it. Seems to have, a lot of people have this response, persistent sexual arousal syndrome, which is, since you take it for sleep, what good is it? If you're going to be all wildly turned on while you sleep, it just means you're going to have these incredible dreams, right? And then there are other things, the SSRIs, when people take these antidepressants, they usually feel a diminished sexual, but when they come off them, sometimes, there is persistent sexual arousal syndrome, which is very uncomfortable. It's a very uncomfortable because you're always turned on, and some part of you is always in heat. You know what I mean? Man or woman, you're there. Feel like a puppy. You know, anyway, so that's another reason that people might be out there all the time. And those people are really sensitized. I mean, they have very, very, very sensitive genitalia. They're flowing, they're hot, they're ready all the time. So those are some of the reasons that people are constantly turned on, but turned on. We're talking about physical things. We're talking about some psychological things. By the end of today's program, I'm going to present you some interesting concepts about why I think it takes place. Now, Heinz Kohut, yes, not the bean maker, Heinz Kohut, K-O-H-U-T, in 1971, a psychologist, I believe, he coined a phrase, yes, he coined a phrase, it was a first, narcissism. He called it narcissism. There was no narcissism before 1971. He said narcissistic personality is what he came up with. And he meant this is a person who is a certain personality disorder, they called it. And they said that people, here's the theory now, he's a very interesting theory, and Kohut didn't say this, he just began with narcissists, learning about them, and people who, you know, seem to be very self-involved and admiring themselves, and they're living in their own world. But a narcissist, if you're in a relationship with a narcissist is on an endless search for admiration, adulation, and affection, the three A's. Yes. And what they want with the admiration and the affection and the adulation, what do they want with all of this? Why do they want it? Because you are the mirror for their personality. Now, this could be a man or a woman. A woman walks down the street, and if she goes to a bar and men are drooling all over her, this could serve the purpose. This could feed the narcissistic ego. Just as well as a man walking down the street, you know, going to a bar, and he's hanging out, and he's looking real good and moving real well, and he gets that admiration and adulation. This could be the narcissistic kind of thing going on. Now, narcissists are very interesting people because they have narcissism is known as self-love, you know, but it's actually not self-love. But that's kind of complicated because in a psychological sense, a narcissist doesn't love themselves. They love this image of themselves. They build an image of themselves and they say, a narcissist unconsciously says to themselves, I am beautiful. And because I am beautiful, I will be loved. and I will be admired. But I don't love back. I just need to be admired. Just think about your movie stars. Think about your writers. Think about the people who want to get themselves in print. Think about the people who have a deep need for admiration. And you can see them walking. You walk down the street and you'll see, you know, the perfectly put together just to take a walk. I know people who get fully dressed up just to do the laundry. You know, they'll be evocative. They're going to look good. They got to look. I can't go out. My hair's not right. I can't go to the grocery store. I'm not looking well. Now, narcissistic people, people who love themselves, are very interesting because this is what happens if you go to bed with a narcissist. It's terrific. I mean, it's you meet them and the narcissist is so self-absorbed, they're so closed in with themselves that this is always a ménage à trois. For those of you who don't know what that means in French, a ménage à trois means three people managing each other, getting in bed together. A ménage à trois, every guy's fantasy. You know, I'm going to get two ladies in bed and stuff like that. Every woman's fantasy, I'm going to get two men in bed. Well, when a woman goes out with a man who's a narcissist, she does get two men in bed. She absolutely does. The man is making love to her, but he's admiring himself. You see, you're admiring him. He's admiring himself. He also admires you if you admire him. You see, so if you give him adulation and you tell him how beautiful he is and how wonderful he is and how potent he is and what a man he is, right, how big he is and all of that other stuff, if you do that, then he kind of gets fed on that. But strange thing about narcissistic men, when they have an orgasm, they kind of, they're done very often. So what happens is you may go, a woman may go to bed with a man who is a narcissistic man, and he has sex, and then when he's done with his sex, he rolls over. Now, you think he's rolling over away from you? No, he's not. He's rolling over to be with himself. He's now going to lay there and hold himself in bed. And it's a funny thing. Narcissistic men tend to hold themselves. They tend to embrace themselves. It's like they have an invisible self they're hugging. And they're done with you. You served your purpose. And this could be the other way, too. It could be women with men. It could be women with narcissistic men. Or narcissistic women with a man. You know, the man has sex with him. They're done with him. Right? They roll over. Oh, I can't sleep. It's too warm. And they're hugging themselves. Because they have a relationship with themselves, and that's the primary relationship. The primary relationship of a narcissistic man or woman is their relationship with themselves. So now let's think about womanizing and manizing. A man goes out, he wants to look, he wants to shine up his shoes, he wants to get more glitter, he wants to make himself beam a little more, he goes and finds himself a partner, whether it be a man or a woman, who admires him, has sex with him, makes love to him, and for that few minutes of time, he shines a little bigger than he did before he went out with that person. And this shine, this glorification, adulation, whatever it is, makes it really exciting and worthwhile. This is Armand DeMille, in case you just tuned in. We're talking about men and women in some of their dating roles and some of the confusing thing about men and women from a psychological point of view and a compassionate point of view. Because, you know, womanizers are really, really, really in tough shape. They've got as much depth as a mud puddle, you know, in the street. There's like so little, look. Let's say you love, and let's say you beautiful self, are looking to love somebody. A narcissist comes along, and he finds you, and you love him, or you love her. And they are shining, glorifying on your love for them, but they can't love you back. They can't, because they don't have that depth. See, theirs is just surface shine. They'll act like they love you. They'll be here because they know they could feed you. And if they feed you enough, like a puppy, you know, they'll feed you and you'll come back and you'll admire them a little more. So you can't get it back but they will give it to you. Now, if you're a narcissist and you've seen yourself over time doing this yourself, you realize that it may be nice to have all this serial stuff going on, one after another, but there's just no end to it, because nowhere is there any depth. And on the bad side of it, if you get a narcissistic partner who believes that you admire them enough that they will stick around with you, because, you know, they may want to stick around with you because you're very good at buffing them, you know, at making them look good to themselves. So they keep you, but they tend to be controlling, blaming. They tend to be self-absorbed, intolerant of any other views. They're unaware of other people's needs. You could be sit there and you could be bleeding and, you know, from your eyes. And they may just think, you know, now how's this going to look if we go out, right? And they're unaware of the effects of their own behaviors on other people. So a narcissist, and they, you know, and here's the trouble also with narcissistic partners. They can't handle criticism. They tend to react with disdain or with rage if they get criticized. They're just not happy about it. They don't like it one bit. Men or women. Now, can women be like this? Yes. There are women I know who tend to be aggressive women. They go out there and they find men, and the men admire them and love them and think they're fabulous, and they get that, and they treat the men just kind of, you know, with disdain. And there are guys who actually enjoy that. They actually like it, so they go back for more and more and more. So we have questions about this. We have questions about, number one, why would you get involved with somebody like that? Well, you know, part of the reason to get involved with a narcissistic man or a narcissistic woman is because you yourself are narcissistic, right? Because you don't want to have any depth, because you don't want to have an involvement with anyone. If you fall in love with a narcissistic man, you could be sure you really don't want an in-deep depth relationship. Now, also, the interesting thing about them is that most narcissistic people, people who are so self-contained that they could go out and command a lot of people, they're interesting people. I mean, they have above-average intelligence, than usual, and they have, they know about things, but no depth. No depth. We love you. You could, like most people, love giving love to people. Do you love loving? Isn't loving a wonderful thing? I think loving is one of them. That's the cat's meow. That's the cherry on the cake. On the what? On the sundae. That's the top of it, you know. Oh, giving love. Not only getting it's pretty wonderful, but giving love and being able to be like you're a messenger of God, you know what I mean? When you're giving love, when you're loving, it is such a beautiful thing. It does such wonderful things for every part of your body. Don't you think? Isn't that the best you, the loving you? Whether you're loving a baby, or you're loving, even if you're loving a dog, but when you're loving another person, oh my gosh, almighty. Sometimes you just look over at somebody and you just get this feeling of, ooh, I adore you. Even if they don't know you're looking at them. So that thing, that loving, giving love is really a fantastic thing. Now, narcissistic people don't get that very much. They don't get that feeling of giving love. They kind of admire. And the only kind of love they really want back, the kind of love, is not one that is complicated. They want the kind of love that looks like worship. See? And worship is an interesting thing. Now, I want to address the issue of men worshiping women. Because you'll see many stories about this where a man is deeply in love with a woman and he worships the ground she walks on and she treats him like he's nothing. Now, we know about men who do this with women. We know about that a great deal. But I mean, women who do this with men. There are men who get worshipped and all this stuff, you know. But the opposite is very, very true. And the interesting thing about men who worship women is they tend to become more obsessed with the women they worship than the women who become obsessed about the men that they worship. Men as worshipers are unrelenting, totally. Because you can insult them. You could treat them so badly, and the more badly you treat them, the more they worship. Yep. So what we could say is, you know, if it's admiration, they'll accept it as their kind of love. Now, we know love is a good thing. Good love involves exchanging respect, affection, time, and support with someone special, right? It feels good, and when it has rough spots, two people work them through. Hey, let's have a rough spot. Oh, a rough spot. At the beginning, it's kind of cute. You know, in your first 2 years, it's kind of cute. It gets less cute as time goes on. Oh, we have a rough spot. Oh, there's another rough spot. But the harsh truth is that there are people who just don't love at all, and they pretend to love, but they can't tolerate any rough spots. They don't want them. Like, we all like to work through rough spots. But with somebody who's a philanderer, somebody who's a womanizer or a man, the real ouchies kick in. In rough spots, regular people look at the matter, review it. They look at their own role in it as a partner. But not this narcissistic lover. They are so desperate to always look perfect to themselves, and the chances of zero of them ever considering that they may have a part to play in whatever the discomfort is. They will never be at fault. So since they could never be at fault, therefore, if you have any kind of a problem, you can't work it out. Because if you got to be in love with somebody, and you make a mistake, and you say, oops, look at what I was doing. I'm sorry. Yes, I was ignoring you. Yes, I was taking you for granted. Yes, I was, you know. But in rough spots, you find out that where the real love is. Anybody who sticks around for the rough spots, that's somebody to love. You know, if you're a guy who's got, who you know, in hard times and bad times, and if you have economic cycles, if you work and your investments go down and you tend to get depressed and you go home and you kick your mate. You know, some guys do that. And then your mate picks up and says, wait a minute, just because your investments go down, please don't kick me. And you say, oops, I'm sorry. I realize I do that every way on a usual basis, on a regular basis, maybe on a monthly basis. If a man does that, if he has reactions like that and he realizes he does, he talks it over, he gets over it. Just as he's willing to accept his mate's monthly reactions. So, but when you're dealing with narcissism, there's no acceptance. There's only one person at fault, and that's the other guy. So, a real narcissistic lover may very well ask you for what you want, and they'll use that information to manipulate you by threatening to withhold what you need. What do you want from me? I just want you to pay attention. Then they'll manipulate you with this, knowing that they have your needs. And they generally, the narcissistic partner, the one who is who you're kind of falling in love with, has three great weapons: threats of abandonment, accusation, and contempt. And when you wonder, why do you love this person? Because they're cute. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind. There's much more to it, as you know. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I'm going to play you something very interesting after our break. I'm going to play you the improvisation for an unaccompanied tenor saxophones, two tenor saxophones, two guys from our old neighborhood, Al Cohn and Zoot Sims. He used to play down here at the Blue Note all the time, at the Half Note. And they would... They got together and made a recording, and I'm going to play that recording for you. It's just two guys on a saxophone jamming. It's kind of fun. It's 2 minutes as soon as we get back. ¶¶ So two guys get their saxophones and they decide that they are going to just, well, let's play doom to doom, doom to doom. So one person plays it one time and the other guy does his riffs and then you switch roles. It's kind of cute. Al Cohen and Zoot Sims, improvisation for unaccompanied saxophones. Only here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts and things to help you lead a more positively minded life. And you are an important part of this show. Yes, you, the callers. We want to take your calls today because I have more information about this, which I'm going to present to you later. Something that I think is mind-boggling about the narcissistic man and woman in a relationship. And the ones, 209-212-209 2900. And we're going to take your calls in just a couple of minutes. And then at the end of the program, I'm going to give you a new punchline. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one of your calls right now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Oh, I am. Okay.
Yes, could you turn down your radio? I hear it.
Okay, I got it.
Yeah, you got to turn down your radio right away.
It's off now.
Good.
My husband is, I think he's a narcissist. At one point, we're married 18 years. At one point in the last 5 years, after he had an orgasm and I was not finished, I asked him to touch me, and he, finally confessed that it kind of repulsed him to do that.
Yeah, at that moment it does, sure.
Hmm.
But he didn't
complain.
Well, yeah, but that may have been hurtful. How long ago was that? 18 years ago?
No, that was about 5 years ago.
It's about 5 years ago. And you took that personally. You said, oh, if that's disgusting to him, then I'm not going to go near him again?
Yes.
You know, you misunderstood. When a man like that has an orgasm, at that very moment, almost everything disgusts him because there's part of what they call the plateau phase, and then there's this drop-off phase. And during that drop-off phase, having any touch or any further contact is a big, giant turnoff because they're kind of sliding into zero. It doesn't mean that he finds it disgusting the rest of the time. It's just you're asking him at the wrong moment for him. So he probably doesn't find it disgusting the rest of the time, and you probably listened to it, internalized it, but because he's narcissistic, you probably couldn't really talk to him about it and get a direct answer.
Direct answers are tough.
They're very, very tough, but I'm sure that's not what he meant. He meant at that moment. See, à le moment critique, as they say in French. At the critical moment, you know. But listen, you therefore must have stayed away from him a great deal after that.
I did, yes.
You see?
It's been a pattern of me initiating.
What did you say?
It was a pattern of me doing all the initiating, so that was kind of a last straw for me. Well, you see,
what happened was you were building an anger, and then you used that as your last straw, as many people do. But that's not the last straw. That was just an available straw to use. But I'm sure he doesn't. I mean, you and he never talked about this at any length.
No, he's very uncomfortable talking about sex.
I understand. So if you said to him you want to have sex, what would he say?
Well, we're pretty well separated now at this point.
But if you asked him, would you want to have sex? What would he say?
In the past?
Now.
Now? No, it wouldn't happen now.
Now I know it wouldn't happen. But what would he say is what I keep asking you. If you said to him...
Well, we agreed to get separated. We're working on that.
You agreed to a separation.
Right.
Boy, sounds to me like the two of you should talk to somebody.
Been there, done that.
What?
Been there, done that.
And did you talk about sex?
Very little.
It sounds to me like you've got to talk to somebody, and the been there and done that very often means you ran into a therapist who really didn't know what they were doing, but for you, sex is very important.
Affection
is tremendously important, and for you especially, more than most people, it's one of your most validating experiences. And if you saw a therapist who didn't discuss that with you, sorry, the therapist missed the boat. Tell your husband you want to have one more shot at it. Give me a call, and I'll find you somebody I could think of. I could think of one specific person who the two of you should just go and talk to before you end the whole thing, because maybe you have a friendship. Maybe there's something in there worth saving. You know what I mean?
Okay. Okay.
What's your name?
Anna.
Anna, I'll keep an eye out for your call.
All right.
Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
212-209-2900, but Anna brings up a very important point. Sometimes we pick on something as being the one issue, but it's really an accumulation of things over time, you know? You know, like if a man was in bed with a woman and the woman was excited sexually and she was feeling really affectionate and he said to her, would you like a salami sandwich? No, if he said... Wrong metaphor. If he said to her at the time, would you like some lasagna? It would be, of course she's going to say, no, what are you doing? We're making love. Who wants food? It's the wrong timing sometimes. Let's take another call. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Hi there, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Armand. This is Robert, your massage practitioner from New Jersey. How you doing?
Hello, Robert, my massage practitioner.
let's see. This one is about me. I've been listening to the program since you started this afternoon, and it sounds as though I'm a little confused, and hopefully you can help me to unconfuse myself. If that's...
Are you, my dear friend, faithful audience person, anything?
Okay. I know that when it comes to my wife giving me criticism, sometimes I don't take it too lightly. When it comes to sex, I tell her that I do not. That I would rather not have sex if I'm not mentally and spiritually and energetically there, but she would rather keep on doing it as well. And then on the flip side of that, I do notice some narcissism behaviors in some of my actions with her. But on the flip side, I'm a very giving person. I mean, of course, obviously because of the type of work that I do. So I'm just trying to work on these things so I can help better my relationship. And on the flip side of that, I'm also, every once in a while, I have, there's this young lady who I've been involved with off and on who is a close friend to my, who's a close friend to my wife, and I, and her and I have this, this virtual connection that I do not have with my wife. So I know that was a lot, but I'm just going to be quiet and see what you can do with that.
Oh, Robert, my dear friend, you know, you're an amazing man. As far as I'm concerned, I followed you as you became your own professional. Yes, 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 you do suffer from a thing that is probably called narcissism. And yes, you do probably have all of these problems in there. And yes, your ability to see inside you and to find your depth is clouded. And I'm so proud of you willing to do this, you know, willing to go in and search and find.
Mm-hmm.
The answer lays somewhere inside you, not with your wife, not with your wife's girlfriend, friend, spiritual guide. Now, what most guys like you would do is they would move to the girlfriend because she admires and shares a spiritual path with you. And then you would use that very thing to separate yourself from your wife, telling her you don't feel the spiritual connection, where the truth of it is you're probably losing your sexual erection in the middle of sex because you just, something about you is turned off to your wife. And it's probably all emotional stuff. It's probably stuff that you two got to talk about on some level that you just can't talk about because you don't know what the issues are.
Yeah, and I, one thing that I do realize online is that a lot of times when we are in the process of being intimate or about to be intimate, if I allow myself to go into that situation with things in my mind from work or internal issues or what have you, that does hinder my openness with her.
Sure it does. Sure it does for you.
But when I'm with someone else, for example, this other young lady, I feel free. I don't have that, and I've been able to analyze this. And the young lady I've spoken to her about it as well. And what I came up with is that emotional attachment that I have with my wife, in regards to any issue that her and I have, and in regards to any issue that I have outside of our relationship, that kind of sort of in some shape, form, or fashion relate to our relationship. That emotional attachment I don't have with anyone else that I have. I hear,
and it's such a setup. It's going to be such a direction and such a path. And Robert, what I could say to you is, you could follow the path you're on. It's one that almost everybody does. They flip from one person to the next because the next feeds them in some way. And then from there, let's say this new person and you have a real spiritual sexual relationship with her and it's perfect. And then 5 years from now, the same kind of thing happens and you turn over to somebody else. Well, you got plenty of time, Robert. You're a very young man.
Yeah, well,
maybe you want to go through it. Yeah, maybe you just want to go through it until you're tired of it. Or the other thing you could do is, as you're doing now, stop and say, no, I'm not going to do nothing until I find out who I am. And that is the path of most resistance, but the path that yields the greatest results. But I'm going to preach it now, and I'm going to say to you, you also got the right to just live it through until you get tired of it.
And I'm going to segue off of that, because I was just about to say that me and this young lady, off and on, her and I have been dealing with each other off and on for almost 12, 13 months now. And something very, I don't know if this is odd, maybe it's not odd, because there are situations that are out there that are like that, I'm sure. But when I was dealing with her and my wife at the exact same time, I felt as if everything was okay.
Sure.
And, I mean, of course, my wife didn't know about the situation, because if she did, it would be another type of situation.
But let me ask you something, Robert. Okay, you call me because you call me for help.
Yes.
Right? And I'm going to help you because, I mean, I'm going to take a step with you.
Okay.
And this is a step of my program. I want to ask you why you and your father could not connect.
My father and I could not connect because he ended up becoming a product of his outside environment, and him and my mother did not want to bring me up around him, so they ended up divorcing when I was before 1 year old. I was still in diapers when they divorced.
Did you meet him?
So the connection that him and I had, we didn't have it, and now he's finally out of jail, and I'm able to have somewhat of a connection with him now, but there's still there's a connection there. I speak with him off and on, but not at the level where it needs to be. So growing up, I didn't have that stable male figure. I had relatives and close friends, things of that nature, people in the church when I was going to church, things of that nature. But I mean, as far as that foundation of mother and father, my mother had to wear both hats. She had to be the testosterone and the estrogen. And I mean, obviously I'm still here and I'm speaking with you. So she did a fairly decent job, but a woman.
You bring me to something and I'm going to hang up on this program,
okay.
on this
okay.
phone call, and I'm going to continue talking to you. Okay.
Okay.
Robert, thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Right, he does massage, right? Is that like misogynism? Okay, no stable male figure. Now, that's a very interesting factor. Because what you will find is most men who are womenizers have no stable male figure in their lives. They couldn't have their fathers. Big deal. Very big issue. In fact, most men who are womenizers, and I say womenizers meaning, you know, everything we've talked about, going from woman to woman, and they're like searching, and they get one, and they drop another one, and they pick another one. Most men who are like that are searching for something. And, you know, if you look at their behaviors, if you looked at a man or a woman, you know, if a woman doing the very same thing, you would say, what are they searching for? Why does he go from this model to that model? You know, you look at some of the movie stars, and they're always dating somebody new. Why is he popping from one to the other? He could have Christie Brinkley. He could have, I guess she's mature by now, right? He could have any of these beautiful, beautiful young women he wants, and he has one, and then he's done with it, and then he has another, and he's done with it, and he's another, and he's done with it, and it's day. What is he looking for? The answer? He's looking for his father. Yep, this is a big deal. A man who cannot find the woman that makes the connection with him is doing so because he is really looking for his dad. Now, I'm not saying he's looking for his dad in a sexual way. I'm saying he's looking for his dad as a significant man in his life. A man who grows up without a father keeps searching for his father. Now, one would imagine that would make it homosexuality appealing to him. He would be looking for another man. No, 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 no. No, he is looking for his father, and here's how he's looking for it. This is a trick. And I can tell you, I've treated many men, and using this as the underpinning, have found solutions. The man is looking for his dad by becoming as male as he could be with women. He becomes his man self. He becomes like a man who had a father all along. He becomes a man when he's with a woman. But then when that woman is done, when he's done with that one and he sees, oh no, I didn't find my dad. I didn't feel complete. He has to move on to another one. There's almost an issue here of trying to connect with dad. And you try to connect with dad by being your male self. So what they call male chauvinist pigs, you know, where they say men are just so male and they just stick with their maleness and they're so testosteronic and something. Usually they're searching for this completion. See, a man wants to grow up. I mean, most men grow up, and what they have at first is they have an identification. They identify with their moms because mom is the one with the milk and who's keeping them going. But then they transfer from that. They go to their dads. And if you're going to find out what being a male father, adult, parent is, you need a father. And if you don't have a father, you still need a father. And if your father is separated from you and not allowed to be with you, or if you can't be with your father, what happens is you grow up trying to find it. I want to find my father, says the man. And where does he look for it? He looks for it in women. And I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. when you give a man the ability to look inside himself and find the part of him that is crying to connect with his father, if you show him the road, if you drop him down the well into the abyss of pain, the place where he could never, we grew up without a dad, it's a very painful thing. But if you help a man go there, if you help him and you show him the path and he goes into it and he feels that pain, when he comes out of it, all those compulsions drop away. Now, on the other hand, I'm going to go to women. Women who are manizers. You know what they're looking for? You got it. They're looking for their moms. The mother who was never truly available to them. The mother from whom they felt that they had to separate because she was toxic. They didn't feel the same connection with mom. Get those women who are dancing around trying to find men all the time. It's the same issue. Once they connect with their woman self, and women are so much luckier because there are women's groups, there are women's collectives, there are places where women gather. If you go to something like Al-Anon, you find a whole group of women who could really be supportive of each other. Those women, when they find each other, all the compulsions kind of disappear. Women connected to women make them free of the compulsion for men and make them available for true love. Men who connect to men, if they can get that connection and feel it, it makes them free to be available for true loving relationships. And that's why, women, I say to you, if you've got a man friend and he is treasuring a male friend he has, cherished that relationship. Have your man friend have men friends. When you have a man friend who only has girlfriends, women friends, it isn't that he's just going to cheat on you. It's that he's going to feel incomplete. A man has to find his male counterpart. A woman has to find her woman counterpart. If you're a woman who doesn't get along with women, and many of you are, you got to fix that before you're ever going to be able to experience a true love with a man. And if that means going into therapy with a woman and trusting somebody, or going into a group and having sisters that you could really trust, whatever it is, find a way there and you'll be able to love really, not narcissistically. Because it makes sense. If you're not going to be really able to love anybody because you don't trust him, you got to love yourself. It's the only thing that's left. But if you find the missing father, the missing mother, if you find the missing part of you, if you find the missing part in your same-sex counterpart, you know, oh, God, then heaven opens. Then the heaven opens where you could feel that incredible beauty, my friends, of feeling like a person complete. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. As promised, I'm going to close my program with a little Harry Sweets Edison. And I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. Special thanks if you want to get a copy of today's program, as many of you will. You can look at the website, thepositivemind.com. Back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m.